It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Do you live in a state where the water's not frozen over? Are you itching to get outdoors and do something this week? Well, pick up your rod, spool up that reel, and go trout fishing. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service stocked some 380,000 pan-sized rainbow, brook, and brown trout in various waters around the states of Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Oklahoma for anglers to catch in the last couple of weeks. Out west, state agencies have also been stocking rainbow trout in various rivers, lakes, and ponds around California, Washington State, and Idaho. And in Oregon, they're also stocking some lakes this week with trout near the coast, though other stockings have been delayed because of wildfires that took place last summer. Just check your state Fish and Wildlife or DNR websites for details and plans to do a little trout fishing this winter. This week on the show, we've got a great mix of hunting, fishing, and outdoors cooking coming your way. We'll start things off in just a minute when we chat with outdoors writer Ken McBroom about wintertime squirrel hunting, which is a little different from hunting them at other times of year. We'll also check in with Pennsylvania hunting guide Michael Huff, who is doing some nighttime hunts for predators like coyotes and fox using thermal binoculars and thermal rifle scopes, something that's not only high-tech but very effective. On the fishing side of the house, we'll be heading to Michigan today, where guide John Littlefield will introduce you to a wide variety of fish you can catch out of Lake Huron, Lake Erie, and Lake Michigan, as well as the Detroit River. This includes well-known fish such as walleye and lake trout, opportunities for Chinook and coho salmon, and opportunities for some fish you might not be as familiar with, like white bass, a feisty fish which are prolific, and cisco, also known as lake herring, that can reach up to 20 inches in size. As for outdoors cooking, it's a little chilly for backyard grilling, but it can be done. And one person who is a true believer in a 365-day grilling season is Ryan Neely with Camp Chef. If he can pull off backyard grilling in Utah at this time of year, so can you. And Ryan is going to share some great tips that will help you serve up some tasty meat, fish, or shellfish this winter. On top of this, we've unfortunately got to share some news about the passing of a fellow outdoors radio show host, but we'll also share some brighter news about a Georgia angler who reeled in a state record fish this month. Now, I was surfing the internet the other day, and of course, one of the places I always check out is henryusa.com. That's the website for Henry Repeating Arms, and if you haven't checked it out yet, you really should do so. Number one, you're going to find out all sorts of information about these American-made, rugged, reliable, accurate firearms that are made in America. Number two, you can ask for a free catalog and two free decals to go with it. Number three, you can increase your knowledge about hunting too. They've got all sorts of articles. Now, one of the articles I read this week was about squirrel hunting during the winter months. And I actually was so impressed by that article, I reached out to the author. His name is Ken McBroom. He hails from the great state of Kentucky. He's known as the Rambling Angler, and he hunts too and writes about both topics. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing great. And that was a great article you wrote at henryusa.com about winter squirrel hunting. I want to share some of the things that you talked about there. And I guess we'll start off with the really basic tactics for winter squirrel hunting, how it differs in terms of being able to find the squirrels as opposed to fall or, you know, earlier in the year.
Well, thanks a lot. Probably the biggest thing for finding squirrels in the winter is covering ground. What you'll find in the wintertime is the squirrels have already rutted, so they're sticking close to their homes and their dens and their nest, so they don't have to come out very much. So they'll come out and get an acorn or something they've buried in the fall pretty close to their home. So you really have to move and keep covering ground just to get enough squirrels that are out that day. They tend to stay inside a lot more than you know, during the spring, or because we have a spring season here in Kentucky. But early in the season, they're chasing other squirrels. They're looking for food. They're burying nuts. So they're moving a lot more and they're busy. That's probably the biggest part of finding them in the real winter time when it's really cold, is they just like to hunker down in their nest. And so you got to cover a lot of ground, I think.
So when it comes to locating these squirrels, I guess the advantage you do have is that the branches are bare. You don't have all that leafy foliage to contend with. If there's snow on the ground, you can actually see the tracks. But you use binoculars. And I guess I've never even thought of using binoculars squirrel hunting. I've always just thought of wandering through the woods and looking up at the branches and listening to see if I can hear a scurrying squirrel. But you use binoculars. You also do some calling. Is that correct?
Yes. I do call more in the early season, just because they're harder to see because of the leaves. But the good thing about that is they can't see you. The problem with calling in the wintertime, and I do carry a call anytime I'm squirrel hunting, I mean, it comes in handy to get a squirrel to move. If you kind of know he's over in a direction and you need him to jump up on a tree or something to get a shot, you can use your call. But the problem with using a call in the winter is there's no leaves, and you can see them, but they can also see you. So you hit that call, and they're going to look for you, and they're going to see you a lot of times before you ever see them. So you got to be careful with a call. Now, the binoculars, I use those more in the winter. I always have binoculars with me, of course, but I use those in the winter because the further you can spot those squirrels, the better off you are, because one, the leaves are so noisy in the winter, so, you know, you got to be careful on your approach and stealthy, and the quicker you know he's there, the easier you can get in on him. So they're usually digging in the leaves, looking for nuts when they're in the wintertime. So they're on the ground, you listen for the leaves rustling, but they're harder to see because they're pretty small and they're down in the leaves.
Right.
So that those binoculars, you know, don't forget the little branches, but mainly the branches, you know, just overhead high or so. A lot of times a squirrel will have a favorite branch that it'll take the nut up and eat it, you know. But usually they're not high up in the trees, of course, because there's no mast up in the trees. So you're scanning the ground, and then you can plan an approach. You can use terrain to get closer. A lot of places I hunt will have the wind will blow the leaves off of a part of the hillside, and prevalent winds a lot of times will clean the leaves in areas, and you kind of plan your stalk, really, and that can help a lot by spotting that squirrel as far away as you can, because when you're covering ground, you're really moving pretty quickly through the woods. But if you can just scan and then move and just do that in increments, you'll see it before it sees you. Reason I use a binocular.
Well, there you go. Ken, you are teaching me and our listeners a whole lot about winter squirrel hunting. I understand you actually have a Henry lever-action 410 shotgun that you use for squirrel hunting. Tell me about it.
Well, it's actually my favorite squirrel gun now. I have to say I still love the .22, and I use it mostly in the winter, for sure, with a scope. Just because the further you can make a shot, the better, too, in the winter. Because,
right,
of course, like I say, they're going to see you, and it's harder to get up on them. But it's fun to take that lever action 410, and, you know, it's a challenge, but it's fun to try to get them in the winter. I use that 410 a lot in the spring. Well, actually, it's all I use in the spring and in the early fall while the leaves are still on the trees. I use that because you can usually get a lot closer. You can spot a squirrel and use the available cover to ease in close enough. But I do take it in the winter sometimes just for the challenge. I mean, it's just fun.
I mean,
some people might not understand that, but I bow hunt during gun season too, so.
I get it. I completely get it. We are out of time, but folks, if you want to find out more about winter squirrel hunting, go to henryusa.com, check out the articles are there, and check out this article by Ken McBroom on the subject. Ken also includes a great recipe you can try out for those squirrels you harvest too. And while you're on the web, be sure to check out Ken's website too. That would be ramblingangler.com. That's ramblingangler.com. And don't forget, when you're at henryusa.com, to ask for that free catalog and for those two free decals too. And if you have any questions at all, just give them a call. Talk to the award-winning customer service staff there. They will answer any questions you have, to include questions about maybe buying a new Henry shotgun for squirrel hunting. Ken, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Ready to step up to a quality-built rifle or shotgun that's a true classic? Check out Henry Repeating Arms, American-made. There's over 200 models to choose from in a variety of finishes and calibers for hunters and target shooters. Many of these are lever-action models with a look right out of the Old West. Don't be deceived, though. Henry Repeating Arms are modern, rugged, accurate, reliable, and have a lifetime guarantee. Find out more and order a free catalog today at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com.
Why book at Sportsman's Cove Lodge?
Why is Alaska like no other place on earth? It hasn't changed in thousands of years.
From the way you get here on a float plane to the way you go out with the guides and the boats, it's just a professional experience.
And I said, this is as good as it gets. I said, if you can't catch fish here, you can't catch fish anywhere.
Your experience with us will leave you speechless.
Book now at alaskasbestlodge.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
Back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop today is the great state of Michigan. It's known not only for football, but it's also known for some great fishing, and we've got John Littlefield on the line. He is the owner of Littlefield Sport Fishing, and he fishes for all sorts of different species out of the Great Lakes there. John, great to have you on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I was checking out your website and looking at the really wide variety of fishing trips that you offer for different fisheries, and I thought that we'd spend a little time introducing some of our listeners to the great fisheries you have in Michigan. Let's start off in Saginaw Bay, Lake Huron. You're doing a lot of walleye fishing there, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we're fortunate enough to have Saginaw Bay. We've got Lake Erie, Lake St. Clair, Detroit River. We have all kinds of great walleye fisheries on the east side of Michigan.
When it comes to Lake Erie, when it comes to Lake Huron, how are you fishing for walleye? Are you basically doing the same thing we do out west in terms of trolling, you know, some sort of spinner worm harness behind a bottom bouncer, or are you jigging them up, or how are you catching them?
Well, the cool part about those fisheries is that you can really catch them however you want to catch them. But by far the most popular way is open water trolling techniques, using inline planer boards like the offshore inline planer boards.
Interesting.
Yeah. I use mostly crankbaits, to be honest with you. In the open water season, mostly unweighted crankbaits, line planer boards.
I'll be darned. How deep are you fishing them?
Saginaw Bay really doesn't get down much deeper than about 30 feet, most of the inner bay.
Okay.
And the same goes for the Michigan waters of Lake Erie. It's fairly shallow.
How big are the walleye in Saginaw Bay?
Depends on the time of year. The spring and the fall, you tend to get much larger fish that tend to migrate out of the inner bay in the warmer months. But all year long, you've got great fishing for numbers of fish up to, you know, 3-4 pounds.
Nice. Very nice. I think people take that all day long. Let's head to the other lake, Lake Michigan, Grand Traverse Bay. I understand you're not fishing for walleye there. You're fishing for lake trout and coho. Is that right?
Yeah, lake trout, coho, and king salmon, chinooks, using trolling techniques as well. But the good part about Grand Traverse Bay is you've got a lot of structure, so you can catch the trout and even the salmon vertical jigging. It can be a lot of fun doing that too.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit more about vertical jigging for salmon and lakers out of Grand Traverse Bay.
Yeah. The lake trout, they're very structure-oriented, and you can get them pretty much year-round jigging. The salmon tends to be more related to the later fall when they're more concentrated toward the river mouths.
Sure.
But jig and spoons, the lake trout, jig and cut bait, a lot of different stuff. The biggest thing is having enough weight where you can get down to reach the depths where you'll find those fish. Like the lake trout in the summer months, a lot of times you're fishing 100 plus feet. So you need 1 or 2 ounce jig to get down that deep and stay relatively vertical.
All right. Now, you are a Max Lure Pro Guide. I'm guessing you use some of their products as well for these salmon and lake trout?
Absolutely. When I'm doing charter fishing out there, most of the time I'm trolling using downriggers, divers, lead core, copper. And I use a lot of Dodgers, either with a fly or a spin and glow. And the two that I use the most, the 9-inch sling blade from Max. I like that one because it's not as speed dependent as some of the other Dodgers.
Right.
A lot of Dodgers, if you get much above 2 miles an hour, they tend to spin out. But that sling blade, I can integrate it into a spoon spread or other things where I'm trolling a little bit faster, and it doesn't lose that side-to-side action. So the sling blade I tend to use probably the most out of any of the Max Lure products.
Let's talk about another fish that you'll find up there at Grand Traverse Bay on Lake Michigan, Ciscos. I don't know anything about these fish except that they look like overgrown herring.
That's kind of what they are. Here we call them lake herring. That's what they are. But there's a lot of different subspecies of Ciscos. Sometimes people tend to think of them more as a bait fish. But on Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, they get 4 or 5 pounds. They're a full-blown predator fish. So we catch them in Traverse City just trolling with our typical lake trout and salmon gear. You know, they'll hit a Magnum J-plug if they're feeling up for it.
How do they fight?
They fight good. They fight really good. A lot of guys target them with spinning gear, especially in the spring and the fall of the year when they tend to be more concentrated. People go out there and cast to them, jig for them. They're great sport fish.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that one of these days. I guess one other question I should ask, these big ones, how do they eat?
How do they taste?
Yeah.
They're good. They're really, I compare them to a whitefish. They're really closely related to a whitefish, so grill them, smoke them. They're really good.
All right. Ciscos just got on my bucket list. Another fish that I'm not familiar with, but I understand is very common in the Detroit River. I mean, right in the shadow of downtown Detroit. You offer fishing for white bass. Tell our listeners a little bit about the white bass and how you catch those.
Yeah, I love them. I mean, some guys tend to get a little bit annoyed with them when they're trying to target walleyes because in the spring of the year, especially early to mid-May, they push in there thick for spawning. And they're like piranhas. They really are. They'll eat any and everything. Average size, 14 to 15 inches. So they're a lot of fun to catch.
Sure.
And you can go out there and target them and catch a couple hundred in a day if you want to.
Oh,
I love it.
That sounds like a great family trip. If you've got young
ones,
especially, you just want to catch a bunch of fish.
Yep. For kids, it's a great way to get a kid into fishing.
Speaking of having a family-friendly platform and fishery, we got to talk about your boat. It's a very unique boat for a guide. It's a 24-foot Angler Quest Tritune. Tell our listeners more.
Yeah, actually, I have to update my website because I just got a 26-footer, the same boat, just a little bit bigger. And it's a great family boat. It's a great hardcore fishing boat. And for me as a guide, it's a great boat for guiding because it has the comforts of a pontoon. But I have it decked out with all the bells and whistles that I'd ever want to fish. It's a center console. It's got a radar arch. It's got autopilot, really everything you'd ever want, downriggers, you name it. They're built here in Michigan, and they're built as a fishing boat just on pontoons.
I'll be darned. I'm going to have to head up to Michigan just to check out that boat and maybe go fishing with you for some of those white bass and Cisco in addition to the other fish you have up there. Let's go ahead and tell folks your website so they can book a trip with you this summer or fall.
Yeah, my website is littlefieldsportfishing.com. And you can check me out on Facebook too, Littlefield Sport Fishing, my Facebook page.
All right, that's John Littlefield, the man behind Littlefield Sport Fishing. He's a Max Lure Pro Guide. He'll take you fishing up in Michigan, like you heard, for walleye, for lake trout, for coho salmon, for Ciscos, and on the Detroit River for white bass and a whole bunch of them too. The white bass and the Cisco, completely unfamiliar with both, but it sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, those two fisheries there sometimes get a bad light. Like the white bass, the guys that are walleye fishing don't like them. But if you are out there to have fun, it's really, it's my favorite way to go out of the river and have fun.
Let's put it this way. You're talking to a guy who fishes for steelhead and salmon and trout and all that. But I'm just as happy reeling in crappie all day. So there's certain days we're just catching a whole bunch of fish that are feisty is just a ton of fun. So it sounds like a white bass trip would be wonderful.
Yep, and the good part about that time of year is if you want to go catch a limit of walleyes, you can do it and then spend the rest of the day white bass fishing and get the best of both worlds. So.
Oh, wow. All right, you've got me hooked. Next time I'm up in Michigan, I'll give you a call.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Sounds like a great time to me. Sounds like a great reason to go to Michigan. John, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio. We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
The Dalles in Oregon is your base camp for fishing fun. Reel in big salmon, tangle with steelhead, bass, and walleye, or wrestle a monster sturgeon to the boat. After the day is done, you'll find a variety of lodging options around town. Need to resupply? We've got you covered with sporting goods stores, plus great dining, breweries, wineries, and can't-miss attractions like the Gorge Discovery Center. Plan your fishing getaway today at explorethedalles.com. That's explorethedalles.com.
Welcome back to America Outdoors Radio. A lot of hunting is done for the year, but there is one thing you can do. That would be predator hunting, and we've got Michael Huff on the line. We've had him on the air before, but it's been way too long since we've talked on this topic. Michael, great to have you back on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to share some predator hunting today.
So you are based in eastern Pennsylvania. You've got a guide service, Master Predator Hunting. Exactly what do you offer your clients this time of year?
Yeah, I have a really unique business for where I'm located, given how private land intensive the East Coast is. But I do some writing and do a lot of guiding. I offer clients guided hunts in Pennsylvania for bobcat, for fox, red and gray, and of course for coyotes.
Most of these hunts take place at night, and you actually use thermal binoculars and thermal optics in terms of rifle scopes. I've got to tell you, my experience with thermals goes back to the U.S. Army all the way back, like in 1990, and we had thermal sights on our TOW missiles to take down tanks and on our Dragon anti-tank missiles as well. Those were really heavy. Those were really bulky. Sounds like we've come a long way since then.
Wow, you know, we sure have. And every year, thermal gets better, and you get more bang for your buck every year. But yeah, I use a thermal binocular, which is great. It's got a giant field of view, and you can get, you know, thermal images out to 2,000 yards. You don't know what they are, but, you know, there's an animal out there, which is an incredible advantage. It's a Pulsar Thermion binocular. And then on the rifle, I have a thermal scope. I run an F4 Defense 243, like an AR-10. And on top of that is a Pulsar Trail. And again, that is a fully packed optic with features, and you can see far away, but you can do a lot of other things too. One of the things I really like is you can actually do some range finding on it. So at night, everything looks different and your depth of field is difficult.
Right.
And you can find that animal, put it in there, and it'll tell you how far away it is to give you an accurate shot. So it's great. You know, you just can't hide from thermal. Anything out there that's different than the ambient temperature just glows. It's a really big advantage for predator hunters at night, for sure.
And I want to touch on that, because thermal, folks, in case you don't know it, it's all about heat. If it gives off heat, you're going to pick it up with a thermal sight. How does this differ, our listeners who maybe have other night sights, like IR sights?
Yeah, so there's really three different ways. Of course, red lights, you're just shining a light on an object and you can see it pretty well. That's got some advantages and disadvantages. And then you kind of take the next step up to IR. And IR is a kind of a middle of the road. It's less expensive than thermal, a little more expensive than a regular optic and a red light. But that, too, is kind of like seeing things in a red flashlight, except the difference is that IR light is, it's red light. We just don't see it, but our scopes pick it up because they're built to pick it up. So you see an image. It doesn't glow. You get great identification, but it's kind of like watching an old black and white TV screen. And that, like I said, has the advantage of being a little less expensive, but you don't really get to see a glowing image. So if you shoot, you may not get subsequent follow-up shots. And then, of course, thermal, whatever is different than the ambient temperature, glows the darkest. But you actually see everything. Like if I'm out on a night like I will be later tonight, it'll be about 21 degrees and snowy. And you'll see the snow, you'll see the trees, you'll see mountains far away. You know, you'll see everything. And again, it'll be like black and white. And then any objects that are alive will be really glowing. You know, whatever I choose, black hot, they'll be black or white hot, white or rainbow. So you kind of have a great advantage, particularly for scanning and knowing that something is there. That's where thermal is really unbelievable because, like I said, you just can't hide from it. It's going to make you glow if you have a temperature that's different than the ambient environment.
So you are taking some clients out tonight, and why don't you explain what that hunt's going to look like and how it's going to go down so that folks listening can get an idea of, if they did book a hunt with you, how their experience would be as well.
Sure. So we'll meet at my place. We'll get together about 5:30 or so around sunset, give or take a half hour. And we will go through all the equipment. It takes a while to orient someone properly to the thermal optic and the firearm and the safety and the really right stuff tripod that I use. So we'll spend about a half hour, as long as the person really needs, just so they're familiar. They get to use the firearm safety, use the tripod. They get to learn how to adjust the thermal for their eye, for the optic, and for the objects. And then once they're good, we'll head out and we'll call for coyotes. We'll take a lot of time getting into a place. Right now, unfortunately, we have about 20 inches of snow, so it can be a little noisy at times. So we'll try to get in, try to find a route into where we're hunting, which could be, you know, half mile in or so, quarter mile in. And then we'll wait a few minutes and we'll periodically, it's completely dark out, we'll periodically make some prey distress sounds. A lot of this time of year, a lot of vole squeaks and things. And as we do that, we're going to be looking through the thermal binoculars, basically in a circle all around us. And this is really a lot of mixed farmland out here. So we can see very, very far away. So like I said, if there's something, a deer, a coyote, a fox out there, you know, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 yards or 50 yards, we'll see it. And then as it comes in, I'll range it for the person on the rifle and tell them how far it is and what it is and make sure they're oriented on it. And then I have a little red light I turn on underneath the front of the gun. And the purpose of that is it hides us behind it. When you hunt with thermal or IR, animals can see you. There's nothing, you know, blocking the view, and they have better vision at night. So if you have a little dark red light source out in front of you, they can see you. So they can come in to 50 yards and they won't know that you're there. And then, of course, somewhere along the line, the person hunting with me will take a shot, and hopefully they'll hit it or miss it or go from there, and we'll just keep doing that throughout the night in different locations.
Wow. Typical night. How many animals are you bagging? Is it all coyotes, or are you getting some other animals too?
Yeah, well, right now we still have fox season in for another week. So we typically, you know, if somebody books a fox hunt, of course, we're hunting fox. And,
right.
You know, and usually there's a lot of fox here. It's pretty about 99% chance of seeing and shooting one. Coyotes are a little more difficult, and it's really up to the hunter if he would like to shoot a fox on a coyote hunt. He's welcome to. Some folks do, and some folks pass them. But I can tell you, since we went to thermal here just this year, it wasn't allowed here, just like I think Kansas and another state or two this year, Pennsylvania opened it up. I can tell you that I see easily twice as many coyotes and bobcats, particularly, as I did when I used the red lights. So it really is. I hate the word game changer, and I just wrote an article on Furfish Game on thermals, and I used the word, and it's the only time in my life I used it. And the reason was because, you know, it really is a game changer. It makes a huge difference.
You said something really important there. Thermal optics are only allowed in two states. So Pennsylvania, what was the other one again?
Yeah, well, most states, at least the majority of states, I think, have legalized thermal optics, but Pennsylvania is a pretty conservative state. So Pennsylvania this year, and I believe Kansas this year, legalized their use for night predator hunting. But they've been used, you know, a long time, you know, in states like Texas and many other states. And so it depends on the state you're in, but now that it's legal here in Pennsylvania, I can tell you it makes a huge difference in your success for sure.
Okay. Thermal hunting for predators. Check to see if it's legal in your state. If not, go to a state where it is. And if you're anywhere back east, consider booking a hunt with Michael Huff. It sounds like a hunt with you using thermals would be a whole lot of fun. The website to go to, masterpredatorhunting.com. That's masterpredatorhunting.com. Michael's also got a YouTube channel where you can see some of these thermal hunts at work. And you just find that at Master Predator Hunting. Michael, thanks so much for sharing this with us today, and good luck on your hunt tonight.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, John.
Hunting and fishing are exercises in hope. Before you head into the woods, you hope to tag out on a deer you'll have to field dress. Before you make that first cast, you hope for a big fish to clean and fillet. When your hopes are realized, you'll need a sharp knife. Whether you sharpen that blade on a power sharpener in the shop or a manual sharpener in the field, WorkSharp has the tool for you. Look for WorkSharp products in sporting goods stores near you or online at WorkSharpTools.com.
The election is over, and this is not another political ad. But with the change in president, there is uncertainty. Uncertainty in the market. Will it be up or will it be down? Uncertainty on how the new administration will handle taxes for your retirement. A new report states that the Biden administration may take away key tax benefits to traditional retirement plans. But what if there was a better way? A way to save for retirement tax-free? We can help business owners, freelancers, and regular working folks get on track with their retirement without risk and without taxes. For more information, get your no-cost, tax-free retirement income strategy guide now by calling 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Find out how sound investment principles can give you a retirement where you eliminate the spend down of your savings and create more income for your retirement tax-free. Call today and get the free guide, 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Call now, 888-585-1615.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Our American spirit is alive and strong, and while we're all going through these unprecedented historical times, we can face these challenges together. Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. Although we may wear face masks and practice social distancing, there are no restrictions on making travel memories for business or pleasure. Taking care of our Shiloh guests and employees is the very essence of what we do. At Shiloh Inns, we're open and ready to welcome you to a clean, safe home away from home. You'll find extra cleaning and sanitizing protocols in place for the safety of our guests and employees. At Shiloh Inns, we offer many free amenities like free Wi-Fi, and even the kids stay free. So book your next stay with confidence at ShilohInns.com or call 1-800-222-2244. Shiloh Inns, affordable excellence. American family-owned and proud of it.
Campers, adventure seekers, hunters, and foodies. No matter the lifestyle, we can all agree on one thing. Great food and great people are worth remembering. At Camp Chef, we don't just make grills. We create each product knowing that a warm meal is always better when it's shared with those we love. Learn more about Camp Chef grills, smokers, and portable cooking equipment at campchef.com. That's campchef.com for a better way to cook outdoors.
Next up on America Outdoors Radio, Super Bowl Sunday is in the rearview mirror, but that doesn't mean that you still don't love grilled meat, whether it's off the tailgate or whether it's in the backyard. But man, it's been cold outside in some of our United States. So we've got Ryan Neely on board with Camp Chef, and he's going to tell you about cold weather grilling, because grilling season is never over, is it, Ryan?
It's not, John. It goes, it's 365 around here. And when I say around here, I'm in Utah, and, you know, we got like 6 inches of snow at my house over the weekend, and it's cold. So we're always grilling.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how to be successful when it comes to grilling your meat this time of year, because it's a little bit different than doing it in the spring, summer, and fall. Number one, it's going to take a little longer. You're going to need a little more fuel, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, times aren't going to vary a whole lot depending on what you're cooking and how you're cooking it, but you will burn a little bit more fuel. Specifically, if you're using a pellet grill, you know, you're going to be burning through that wood at a higher rate just because it might be 10 degrees, 30 degrees outside versus, you know, 60 to 90 degrees outside in the summer. So you will burn a little bit more fuel, but one of the keys that will really help with that is something to insulate your grill. We have some blankets, grill blankets. These are specifically designed to go over your grill, and those will definitely hold that temperature a lot more. The other thing to consider, too, is the wind. This does affect you in the summer, but those winter winds can be a lot more harsh. So if your grill is situated in a place, you know, you might want to get it somewhere in a safe place to still cook, but out of the wind.
Let's talk a little bit more about those insulated grill blankets. I'd never even heard of those until I got an email from you about those. How exactly do they work and help with the grilling?
You know, it's very similar to you or me, John. If you're sitting in the deer blind or the duck blind and it's cold, you throw a blanket on you, you're going to hold that heat a lot more. Very similar to an insulated jacket, a down jacket or something. Obviously, this isn't down material, but it's the same concept as wearing a coat. Put it over the grill, and it will hold that heat a lot more. It's a fireproof material, and then there's magnets that just hold it to the grill. So it's actually, it's pretty simple and just goes on really quick and easy.
Something else we should talk about, and I'm horrible at this, is stop opening the lid on the grill, especially when it comes to winter grilling. I'm always doing it because I'm always checking the meat and checking the temperature or flipping the steaks or whatever I'm doing, but I understand I should resist that temptation as much as possible.
I mean, anytime you open the grill, it's you're just letting that cold air in. You're letting the hot air out. It's going to slow down that process. We have a few different grills in our lineup that would really be the perfect option. One is our Woodwind grill. It has Wi-Fi capabilities. Well, actually, several of our grills have Wi-Fi capabilities. So all you would do is put that meat probe into the meat that you're cooking. You know, if you're doing a whole chicken, steak, pulled pork, whatever, leave that lid closed. There's really no need to open that lid unless the type of food you're doing requires you to flip it. And you can see what's going on, everything from your phone inside your house. Don't need to leave. Other things are going to be different, obviously, if you're cooking on a flat top grill.
Sure.
Or Dutch oven cooking or something like that.
Speaking of Dutch oven and cast iron, great little hack that I read in a recent article from Camp Chef about making cast iron your friend, heating it up in the grill, and that way when you transfer the food to it, you're not losing, again, all of that heat.
Yeah. Cast iron holds heat so well. I mean, it's one of my favorite things to cook with because of that reason. And that's one of the reasons it has been so popular since pioneers came across the Oregon Trail, to be honest. And even before that, cast iron cookware has always been a staple in every kitchen across America. And if you don't have cast iron in your lineup, I would definitely be looking at it. And Camp Chef's got some great options.
One last question for you, Ryan. It is Valentine's Day weekend. What are you going to be cooking for your wife to make her happy?
You know, I was down at the grocery store the other day, and I saw some lobster tails down there. They had some large ones and medium ones. Anyways, they looked good. I thought those will be perfect on the grill. throw them on there, cook them to about 145 internal temp, baste them with butter. I think they'll be delicious. So that's probably what I'll end up doing.
I think you're going to make her very, very happy with that. Folks, if you want to find out more about cold weather grilling and check out some great grills, the website to go to is campchef.com. They've got recipes, they've got articles, and of course, they've got a great lineup of products in terms of propane grills and pellet grills and everything else to help you cook some great food 365 days a year. The website again, campchef.com, and look for Camp Chef products in quality stores all over the country. Ryan, always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing this with us today.
Thanks, John.
One thing that you have to have if you're going to be doing some backyard grilling is some cutlery. You'll want to make sure it's sharp. And one thing that'll help you keep those knives sharp is the E2 Electric Kitchen Knife Sharpener from WorkSharp. And in case you haven't been paying attention the last couple of weeks, we are doing a Valentine's Day giveaway. And you have a chance to win this $50 electric knife sharpener. It's really compact, perfect for the kitchen. It'll sharpen not just your knives, but also your kitchen shears and other devices you have to help prepare that meal. If you want to enter, just go to our Facebook page at America Outdoors Radio, like and follow our Facebook page, then go to the post thread where we've got this contest. Just let us know where you're listening from in terms of city and state or county and state. And if you want a bonus entry, let us know what station you're listening to as well. If you don't do Facebook, that's okay. Just contact us through our website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Give us the same information, and you've got an entry and a chance to win. We'll draw one lucky winner after our last broadcast on Valentine's Day. That Facebook page again, it's America Outdoors Radio. Again, be sure to like and follow the page and give us that information on the post thread where we're doing the contest. Or, again, you can go to our website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Give us that same information through our Contact Us page, and you will be entered. And by the way, if you want to check out more details about this E2 kitchen knife sharpener and other products from WorkSharp, they make lots of great knife sharpeners and tool sharpeners. Go to their website at WorkSharpTools.com. You can order products online there. You can also find WorkSharp products all over the country in quality hardware and sporting goods stores. Turning to outdoors news, we've got sad news about a fellow Outdoors Radio show host, John Hennigan, the longtime host of Fish Talk Radio, which aired on 40 stations and on Sirius XM satellite radio, has passed away at the age of 72 at a Ventura, California hospital from an infection. John started his show in Santa Barbara, California, and grew it from there into much more than a California fishing show. John spent quite a bit of time fishing the salt water around the Baja Peninsula in Mexico, as well as in Costa Rica and Alaska. John's show garnered multiple awards from the Outdoor Writers Association of California, to include several awards for having the best outdoors radio show in the state. Rest in peace, John, and I hope you're reeling in some real big ones up there. Wrapping things up today on a brighter note, congratulations are in order to Christian Blake from the Outdoors News Daily. I can share Christian, who hails from Swainsboro, Georgia, reeled in a new Georgia State record fish this month out of the Ogeechee River. Blake was actually fishing for crappie when a 2-pound, 3-ounce hickory shad smacked his hook. He reeled that shad in, got it weighed and certified, and found out it broke the former record, which had stood for 25 years. Now that's a day on the water to remember. Congrats again, Christian. One other thing to share. Are you retired? Do you maybe own an RV? Are you looking for something to do this summer? And do you enjoy camping? Well, consider becoming a campground host at a state park in one of our 50 states. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources is actively looking for campground hosts right now for 12 state parks, and other states are also looking at this time of year too. What does this involve? Usually about 20 hours a week of light maintenance and just answering questions, giving directions, that sort of thing for people coming to the campground. If you're a people person, you'll probably love this job. Now, these campground host jobs generally last 1 to 5 months, depending which campground you're working in, which state. And while they usually don't pay anything, you do get to camp for free the entire time you're there. And in some states, there's even a small stipend, too, to help you out. So, contact Iowa DNR if you're interested in being a campground host there, or check out opportunities in the state park system where you live. As we tie a bow on this week's edition of America Outdoors Radio, I hope you'll get out there on the water or in the field or in the woods and make some memories for yourself, too. Whether you're fishing or hunting or soaking in nature, it's all good for the soul, even in the middle of winter. Here's hoping you're blessed in the days ahead. Here's hoping you stay healthy. And here's hoping you get to spend some time outdoors.
Backcountry hunters and anglers, the men and women working hard to keep public lands in public hands. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.